For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
So, I just want to offer a heartfelt welcome to Chisan Tova Green, Compassion Mountain. And Tova is the liaison to Branching Streams, which is this wider sangha that we're connected to through San Francisco Zen Center and Suzuki Roshi lineage around the planet. And Tova has been and continues to be an amazing support for me personally and for our sangha. So I could say a million things about Tova, but Tova, tell us what you'd like us to know. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Hogetsu, for the warm welcome, for introducing me. And thanks to all of you, and thank you for inviting me to come. And thanks to all of you who are in this room this morning for being here, and to all of you who are joining in your own homes and at Milwaukee Zen Center. I'm really happy to be here. It's not my first visit to Ancient Dragon, but certainly my first in this wonderful space you're practicing in now. I'll just say a few more words of introduction about myself. I use she, her pronouns. I am a resident of San Francisco Zen Center. I moved in 1999, and I'm still there. I think it's 25 years. And I have had many different work practice positions, we call them, inside the temple and also outside doing hospice social work. And as Hogetsu said, currently I'm the Branching Streams liaison or director, and my work is to connect Zen centers and sanghas in the Suzuki Roshi lineage. There are about 80 groups. The numbers keep changing because groups continue to want to affiliate with Branching Streams as new teachers emerge. And as Hogetsu said, it's around the world. There are most of the Zen centers in Branching Streams are in the U.S., all around the country, and there are several in Canada, one in Medellin, Colombia, one in Mexico, one in Australia, several in Europe. And my work is to find ways of supporting the teachers and leaders and sanghas, and also to connect people with each other. And one of the ways we do that is through having a gathering every 2 years. And in 2025, Ancient Dragon and Milwaukee Zen Center will be combining talent and energy to host our 2025 gathering, which will be at Loyola, I hope I'm saying that right, Loyola University's Recreation Center. Beautiful green space between Chicago and Milwaukee. So I really appreciate the way you took time this morning to introduce yourselves. Not all sanghas do that. And I think it's very welcoming. And the topic of my talk today is welcoming. I'm going to start with a poem and then talk a little and give you an overview of what I'll be sharing. This is a poem by Naomi Shihab Nye, one of my favorite poets. Naomi lives in San Antonio, Texas, and her father was Palestinian, her mother American, and she spent part of her early years in Jerusalem visiting relatives, and I love the spirit of this poem. It's called Red Brocade. The Arabs used to say, when a stranger appears at your door, feed him for 3 days before asking who he is, where he's from, and where he's headed. That way, he'll have strength enough to answer. Or by then, you'll be such good friends, you don't care. Let's go back to that. Rice, pine nuts. Here, take the red brocade pillow. My child will serve water to your horse. No, I was not busy when you came. I was not preparing to be busy. That's the armor everyone puts on to pretend they have a purpose in the world. I refuse to be claimed. Your plate is waiting. We will snip fresh mint into your teeth. So in that spirit of welcoming, I also want to say that I made a very quick visit to Milwaukee Zen Center before coming here yesterday, and I want to thank the guiding teacher there, Rayrin Gumbel, for the warm welcome she gave me, and the Sangha member who drove to the airport to pick me up late at night. And even though the visit was brief, I felt extremely welcomed, as I do here, and with Lori Hogetsu hosting me. And I've thought a lot about what it is to be welcoming, and it's one of the themes that we're exploring at San Francisco Zen Center. But as I travel and visit centers, I have this a wonderful feeling of being welcomed even by the space, which always feels really familiar, and the chants that we do, the way the altar is cared for, the sound of the han and the bells, and it's something that is passed from one hand to one hand, and from the early time when Suzuki Roshi first came and started to practice with people first in his Japanese community in Japantown, and then with Westerners, and then eventually at Tassajara, which was the first of the three Zen centers that are part of San Francisco Zen Center, and invited people to come and from Japan and help him teach some of the forms that we still use and the chanting that we still do. We're part of a long heritage, which I really appreciate. So I'm going to talk about welcoming in different ways. I think how we can be welcoming, fully welcoming to parts of ourselves that we may find difficult to welcome, how we can be welcoming in one-on-one relationships with one another, how a community can be welcoming, and how do we try to welcome folks in our wider society in what is currently a very divided country and world. So these different levels of welcoming are all, I think, important to think about. And I just want to share some synonyms, some other words that convey the spirit of welcoming according to the dictionary. Accessible, approachable, responsive, and I think another important word is inclusive. And we're about to start a practice period at San Francisco Zen Center, which I'm looking forward to co-leading with two of my Dharma brothers, Eli Brown Stevenson and Timothy Wicks. And we're using a fairly new text called Welcoming Beginner's Mind. I don't know if the folks online can see it. It's by Galen Ferguson, And Galen Ferguson was a very early student of Trungpa Rinpoche, and he talks a lot about the friendship between Trungpa Rinpoche and Suzuki Roshi, and draws from both teachers and many other teachers in talking about welcoming. And one reason we're using this book is that for the past year, our main building in San Francisco, it's a beautiful Julian Morgan building that's over 100 years old, has been closed for renovations. And we're trying to make the building more welcoming. We're installing an elevator because it's a building that goes from the basement and has three floors. And up until now, if someone was in a wheelchair, they could not access the upper floors. And when visitors come with heavy suitcases and have to carry them up to the third floor, it doesn't feel very welcoming. Also, we're redoing all the plumbing, and all the bathrooms will be gender neutral. And we're creating a space in the front of the building that used to have a front office, a bookstore, and a guest room. That space is being opened up to create a welcome center. And the bookstore will be part of it. People can come and have a cup of tea when they arrive. I think it will just change the feeling, and there'll be a wheelchair, a ramp going into the building through that new door. So we're talking a lot amongst ourselves about how to be welcoming when we reopen, how to welcome the wider Sangha, and just exploring all the various ways of welcoming people. So when we think about welcoming oneself, one of the teachings in this book is that welcoming is our true nature, and that our true nature is a phrase that Suzuki Roshi also used in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, the collection of his talks. And the way Galen Ferguson describes welcoming as our true nature, he says it isn't the result of years of hardcore practice. Our true nature is like the sky, the ocean, a mountain, the moon, the stars. It's very spacious. And Suzuki Roshi called this original mind. It's what we originally are, our original goodness. And we may not always be in touch with that part of ourselves, that original mind that feels so spacious and can welcome everything. There are several ways, I think, in Zazen that is one of the ways we may experience that spacious, open mind. And also in Zazen, where we may notice other states of mind that we have, and can we be welcoming to all of the thoughts and sensations and emotions that arise. When I worked in hospice, I learned some teachings that one of the founders of the Zen Hospice Project developed, Frank Ostaseski is his name, and he called them the five precepts of Zen caregiving, but later on he changed that word from precepts to five invitations. One of those five is welcome everything, push away nothing. And, you know, when you're caregiving, it may be hard sometimes to welcome everything. The person you're taking care of may be upset, maybe grumpy, maybe having physical pain, and it may be hard to know how to be helpful, but still to be able to sit by the bedside and welcome or be present for everything that arises and that can apply to oneself when we're sick or having a difficult day at work or with a friend or a loved one. Can we welcome everything as an opportunity to get to know ourselves better to begin with, and then to be more available in whatever situation we are dealing with? Another part of welcoming everything, I think, is the spirit of curiosity, inquiring, and cultivating curiosity and beginner's mind, another quality that Suzuki Roshi spoke about. It's the mind that has more questions than answers and that can meet things in a fresh way, even things that we do over and over again. Can we bring a fresh beginner's mind to, say, chanting, when we chant similar things every day, or to preparing a meal? It's a way of staying engaged with our activity throughout the day. And the one other aspect of welcoming everything internally is paying attention to how we talk to ourselves. I don't know about you, but in Zazen, I often have a conversation with myself, and I have to notice the tone of my voice. Am I being kind to myself? You know, or am I overly critical, or, you know, dwelling on a mistake I might have made, or I have made? I make mistakes quite often. And can I forgive myself and go on? But listening to that voice and practicing kind speech with oneself. And so when we think about, I'm going to move on to welcoming another, or to also practice with kind speech, kind speech includes the precepts around speech, which are telling the truth to ourselves as well as to others, meeting others on equal ground. Sometimes that's phrased as not praising self at the expense of others, not gossiping or slandering, talking behind others' backs. But there's a way in which kind speech is described by Ehe Dogen. So Dogen was a teacher who lived in the 13th century in Japan and was a very prolific writer. And one of his essays, it's called The Bodhisattva's Four Methods of Guidance. One of those four methods is kind speech. And a bodhisattva is an awakening being, someone who wants to wake up in order to help others wake up and fully appreciate our lives. So Dogen says, kind speech means that when you see sentient beings, you arise the mind of compassion and often words of loving care. It is contrary to cruel or violent speech. Those who hear kind speech from you have a delighted expression and a joyful mind. So I really appreciate that definition of kind speech. And you know, often the Buddha's guidance around kind speech has to do with is it true? Is it kind rather than harsh? Is it timely? Given at the right, especially if you are thinking, well, you might want to give someone some feedback, how can you do it in a way that is connecting rather than divisive. So is it kind? Is it timely? Is it connecting rather than divisive? Is it true? And often really thinking, are all of those things present when you're talking with another, particularly if you are giving or wanting to give some feedback, and also to check in with the other person about whether they are willing to receive it. And along with kind speech goes deep listening, the ability to really listen to one another and to listen without trying to plan what you're going to say, but just be fully there as you listen and then let a response come. So I'm going to move on to talking about how we can be welcoming in our own communities. And I really appreciate it that this is something you're picking up at Ancient Dragon. I'll just talk about two things. There are many ways of being welcoming. One is a concept that I learned from Larry Yang, who's a Buddhist teacher in the Insight tradition. He wrote a wonderful book called Awakening Together, and he talks about creating a safe enough space. So people come to a Zen center, or let's just say to a Zen center because that's where we are, sometimes feeling uncomfortable, looking around, is there anyone like me in the room? What would it take to feel safe enough to relax and be able to sit? Sitting facing the wall requires a certain amount of trust, I think. And, you know, all the things that happen as we come in the door. I noticed Elliot, the greeter this morning, was very welcoming. I saw Mike show Sam to his seat and teach him how to bow to and from the curtain, the cushion, very welcoming. And all those small things can really make a difference. How the room is set up, the care that was given to the altar before we got here, welcoming the people online, which Jerry was doing so beautifully. These are some of the things that can contribute to creating a safe enough space and a welcoming space. And another thing that can be helpful is having some communication agreements for classes and other activities in a Zen center or at San Francisco Zen Center. We use a number of communication agreements that were developed by folks at the East Bay Meditation Center in Oakland. It's a center that Larry Yang was one of the founders of, and they call them Agreements for Multicultural Understanding. And some of the branching stream centers have adopted them. And I really like the ones that Brooklyn Zen Center uses. I'm just going to share a couple of them, and I think you'll see how they can help create a safe enough space. So one is practicing self-focus and speaking using I rather than generalizing and saying we when we're asking a question or being a Dharma talk. I try not to say we too much because I don't, unless I can say who the we includes, because it often might, if I say we, it might not resonate with your experience, and then you might wonder, well, who is the we? I don't feel part of that we. So using I can be helpful. Practicing using both and, you can have two feelings at a similar, at the same time. It might be enjoying this beautiful day today, but also concerned about something that may be happening, that is happening in the world around us. And those feelings, one doesn't cancel out the other. Sometimes just using both instead of and is a way of acknowledging two realities that can be happening at the same time. And another communication agreement is refrain from blaming self and others. And we're trying to look at our own contribution if we're having a conflict with someone, and not blaming or shaming the other person or ourselves. And then just one more, it's called taking space, making space. So an example would be in a conversation or in a meeting. If I realize that it's easy for me to talk, I might want to hold back, not always be the first to speak, and make space for others for whom it might be a little more difficult to speak. And if I'm one of those people who might be shy or just not comfortable speaking in a large group, to see if I can take a step and raise my hand. So that way the space is shared more equally. So lastly, welcoming in this challenging time that we're living in, I think that can be very difficult to welcome everything, even what's one time I was talking with someone and they said, how do you welcome what is unwelcome? I think one way is just facing it, you know, that we're not, we are living in a country that's divided right now. We're living in a world with many wars going on. And I think for me, it's just paying attention, trying to keep up with what is happening, even, and then seeing what are some things I can do that might be small things, but that might make a difference. And one of those is practicing kind speech. The last thing Dogen says in his essay about kind speech is that kind speech can turn the destiny of a nation. And that's helpful for me to remember in this time where, you know, speech is often used to shame or blame and divide rather than to connect and heal. So I think I will end there because I want to leave time for your comments or questions. And I'll just read the beginning of Naomi Shihab-Nye's poem one more time to bring in that spirit of welcoming. The Arabs used to say, when a stranger appears at your door, feed him or her for 3 days before asking who they are, where they're from, where they're headed. That way, they'll have strength enough to answer. Or by then, you'll be such good friends, you don't care. I'll stop there. So, do we do the closing chat now or after the question?
After, so we'll have a little discussion. Thank you so much, Toga. And in case anyone hasn't noticed, we do have our own communication agreements at Ancient Dragon posted in the kitchen. It's great to have this teaching and encouragement from you, Toga, and let's welcome comments and anything you'd like to ask or share with Toga. So thank you.
And if you could, since I don't know all of you, if you could say your name, and we also welcome questions and comments from the online folks, you would monitor that. Thanks.
Okay.
It's always hard to get started.
Yeah, Jordan.
I'm Jordan. I wanted to say thank you again for gracing us with your speech today. And I really appreciate the sentiment about welcoming. We recently went as a sangha to Green Gulch Farms in San Francisco. And I'm very new to this practice as well. So that experience was more impactful, I think, for me because I was really jumping in the deep for practice and being surrounded by a community and having a sense of welcoming. And you mentioned feeling very welcome, and Sam is also new here to the Ancient Dragon. I also experienced that same kind of energy at Green Gulch many times over. I've never been to California and that region before, so it was a lot of new experiences, but I think all of us that have visited Green Gulch can agree that we felt like a family. We felt like very included in the residence. Like, felt like guests. We felt home. And I don't know about the other branching stream sanghas or communities. There's a similar kind of feeling here, but I appreciate you bringing the idea and energy of welcoming into this sangha. And it just resonated with me, the experience that I had at Green Gulch. So I hope that other branching streams are similar in that kind of opening arms.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm so glad to hear about your experience at Green Gulch and that you felt welcome. And I hope you may have a chance to visit San Francisco Zen Center once we reopen and that we'll be able to extend that same kind of feeling. That you went as a sangha was really wonderful. We started having sangha weeks at Tassajara Zen Center some years ago, and now this year and last year, 25 different sanghas went to Tassajara, and you're going as a sangha, I think, really creates more closeness within your sangha here. But to have that experience of being welcomed by Green Gulch or Tassajara or City Center, I think there's a sense of connection with a wider sangha that you're part of. And it's the feeling I get when I come here to Milwaukee or other centers when I visit, and we have a lot in common. We don't always notice that or know that. Yeah, and your first trip to California, I mean, there was so much that was new. So I really appreciated hearing about your experience.
So I'm Sam. Thank you all for welcoming me. I'm a visiting student here for a conference. And I haven't sat here before, so sorry about the extra bells and the running off to get it. And I have a perspective in space. Thank you for visiting here today. I guess I wanted to ask, you said welcome everything and even perhaps the unwelcome. So I guess in our own lives, if we experience a conflict or something that strikes us as unwelcome. I guess, do you have a personal practice for like stepping back and taking a breath, or, you know, if something, you know, really feels wrong to you, what is your kind of practice or suggestion?
Well, it depends on the situation, but I think taking a moment to take a breath and really notice my feelings about it. Sometimes I can hear something that makes me really angry, and that's when I really need to take a. If I immediately say the first thing that comes to mind, it will undoubtedly contribute to conflict. So, you know, really thinking, okay, what might be a skillful response here? Sometimes it's not to respond at that moment, but maybe to come back to it later. I think in general, though, if I am in conflict with someone, I try to find a way to meet it rather than avoid it. I used to be very conflict averse. And many people at Zen centers are, I think, you know, it's sometimes we come because we want to have peace and quiet. And yet, there's no way of avoiding conflict in one's life. But to learn how to meet it and have a conversation that could be a learning conversation, not shaming or blaming, you know, kind of recognizing what I might be bringing to the conflict, I think is a very important skill to develop. And it does, it like any other skill, it takes practice. But I hope that's helpful. Thanks for asking the question and being here today. Yes, Salah.
Just as a follow-up to that, you know, I think, I don't know if you're familiar with Larry Ward. He does a lot of talking about, we were just talking about it in the car on the way here, about mindful consumption of news. And that's hard for me right now to do it. And I find myself getting really overwhelmed really quickly. But not, and then I find myself pulling away and not wanting to know anything. And like trying to find that balance to not totally shut it out, but to be mindful and to try to find ways to bring love.
I think really that being mindful of how much you can listen to news when it's very painful is important, and know when to stop and know how to take care when the news is upsetting. It's... it's finding some balance between like shutting it out completely or being numb, and being on the other end, not being able to stop listening, and then just being upset all the time because it's hard to hear. So I think for each of us that finding that little way is important, and, and I do find, you know, for me, even finding, well, it can be helpful if you have a friend you can talk with about your feelings and thoughts about what's going on in the world. That can be very helpful. And finding some small thing you can do that might make a difference, whether it's making a donation, writing a letter, writing postcards to voters in swing states. You know, there are things we can do that can help us feel engaged in at least trying to create a better world. Thank you.
My name is Paul. Related, well, in some ways the same question, but maybe just asking for my own, for help for myself. I mean, I'm a kind of a news junkie. You know, I read 3 newspapers a day, and I listen to the BBC every, international news every day, and I have, you know, NPR on all the time. And it's this morning I just turned it off. I had to, you know, put on the BBC World Service as I do every weekend morning, and before my family's awake, I just turned it off. You know, I couldn't do it, and I listened to a Dharma talk actually. But so the question is, there's welcoming, right? Mm-hmm. Everything that comes, and embracing, I forgot how it went, embracing everything and not pushing away anything.
Welcome everything, push away.
Welcome everything, push away nothing. But there's also seeking it out, you know. There's this sort of, I think probably going back to my father who read every newspaper, it was always, the news was everything in many ways. In the house, at least for him and then for me to a certain extent, I have this impulse to have to be completely immersing myself in whatever's possible to immerse oneself in terms of news. And of course that can be just very difficult. And so, you know, can you help with, you know, finding the difference or the point, right, where it's welcoming and not pushing away, or it's, you know, scattering oneself too much or just seeking out a kind of overwhelm, you know, mm-hmm. which is mm-hmm. often how it feels for me.
If you're seeking out a kind of overwhelm, what are you not paying attention to?
Yeah. I put it in those terms, seeking an overwhelm. I don't consciously think of it that way, right? But this morning it kind of felt like that.
And this morning you turned it off.
Yeah, so. I turned it off. I just said, okay.
So what led you to turn it off? That might be good to pay attention to. When is it too much?
I mean, I don't know how to answer it except to say that it just felt, it can feel like this is not helping, you know. I mean, I can always do more, I should do more, I want to do more, but I give lots of relative to what I have, you know. I'm a monthly donor to many different things, and you know, that just happens now, of course, without me. Well, maybe that's something to think about. Maybe I should take it back, you know, not take the money back, but take back the decision making. Now I am giving, right? Now here's something I'm doing, and that might help actually, rather than just knowing, well, you know, the bank is or PayPal or whatever, it's just making these things happen. But I guess I'm suddenly thinking now or feeling now that maybe part of my question is about, it's about that, right? It's about not feeling conscious, about it, mindful, I guess.
Well, what I'm hearing is that you are a generous person, that you're contributing where you can, but also, you know, just taking that as a question, when is this too much, may be helpful. And it sounds like this morning, at least, you paid attention to when it was getting to be too much. Can you do that more often? Or even take it as a koan, you know, when is this too much? And how much do you need to know? I don't have to answer the question, but, you know, just hold it as a question. Thank you for sharing that.
Tied in my mind has something.
Oh, great.
Hi, Tova. Thank you for coming. Thank you for really fine talk. Really appreciated it. And I had something to say about welcoming, but first, just briefly to respond to Paul as a fellow news junkie. It helps if you're doing things to help. So some of the things that Tova mentioned, writing postcards, whatever, little things might make a big difference in various situations, not to shut off our attention to the world, but to measure it and also to do other things that are just enjoyable personally, that so you're not just focusing on the news. Anyway, that's just response to Paul. But Tova, I am so happy to hear what you're saying about San Francisco Zen Center focusing on welcoming. And just to say, when I first showed up at San Francisco Zen Center way back in the late 70s, it was pretty unwelcoming and continued to be so for a while. You know, people hung out together and didn't welcome new students. There was just this feeling of insularity. So I think San Francisco Zen Center and all its campuses have really matured a lot, and I'm so happy to hear that there's a focus on welcoming. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Taiga. And yes, I was smiling because I remember those, even when I came, which was after you came, people would open the front door with a very expressionless face and, you know, what do you want? Or why are you here? We really have come a long way, I think. And so I was so happy to hear Jordan's experience at Green Gulch. I think you would have a similar experience nowadays if you came to City Center. But it wasn't always like that. And we had a reputation for not being very welcoming. So, yeah, thank you, Taigen, for that comment. And also for your suggestions about, you know, it's important to do things that we really enjoy doing that give us pleasure. And also, Taigen, I know that you care deeply about what's happening in the world and always, I don't know always, but have for a very long time and have supported the Buddhist Peace Fellowship and many other things that you do. So thank you for listening and being here this morning. Anyone else? Is there anyone else online, Jerry?
No, there's no one with their hand.
Well, thank you very much, Toba, and for your great encouragement to us and to this world. So I think what will happen now is we will chant the Bodhisattva vows. We won't have a work period. We'll just have tea so we can welcome Toba further. And after the vows, we'll have announcements from our email. So.
Our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way.
Beings are numberless. We bow to freedom. Delusions are inexhaustible. We bow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We bow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We bow to realize it. Beings are numberless. We bow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. We bow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We bow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We bow to realize it. Beings are numberless. We bow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. We bow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We bow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We bow to realize it.